And many of these songs are in the same meter, so we'll be singing. We could sing it in another way, but I think this is very suitable. The way we're singing it is, it brings out the bhav of the pain, spiritual pain. It all comes down to separation from Krishna. It's all part of viraha bhav, how I'm separated from you. There's one kind of separation. Well, we often hear of the separation of Krishna and Radha are not together, and they're feeling separation, or they may even be together and feeling separate. But this is separation, feeling separation caused by my own worldliness, my own sinfulness. So that feeling is there. I'm away from Krishna. But what's the cause? The cause is my own materialistic outlook. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is Sharanagati, taking shelter. Now I've come to take shelter of you. We'll find this more. Well, this is a whole study in itself, Sharanagati. The solution to the lamentation is, it's not hopeless lamentation. It's not the lamentation where there's no hope in sight. There's almost there in the Gopinath song. But ultimately, there's always the hope, just hanging on by a thin thread of hope that surely Gopinath will save me. And this song, and Ekonaki Hobe Goti, we're just left hanging that what's going to happen. But he's turning to Hari, to Prabhu, to Krishna. So that's the hope. This hopelessness, when we become completely hopeless, then we can fully turn in shelter, taking shelter of Krishna. Therefore, Nairasha Parama Sukham, Paramam Sukham. The greatest happiness arises when we have no other hope left. This was stated by the prostitute Pingala, quoted by the gopis, when she had no customers coming all night. She was feeling completely hopeless. No one wants me. Then she turned to Krishna. So the next song, Biddara Bilai. I think we'll sing it first and then we can... we'll sing it first and then we can go through it. You all got the song? You all ready to sing? Yeah? Biddara Bilashe, or in Bengali, Biddara Bilashe. Bilashe. Biddara bilashe katainu kal param shahoshe ami. Biddara bilashe katainu kal Parama Shahoshe Ami. Tomara Charan Nabhajinu Kabhu. Tomara Charana Na bhajinu kabhu. Ekhon sharana tumi. Ekhon sharana tumi. Parite parite parasha barilo gyane gati hobe mani. Parite parite parasha barilo Parite parite bharasha barilo gane gati hobe mani. Shaya shabi fall, shigana durbal. Shaya shabi fall, shigana durbal. Shigana agyana jani. Shigana agyana jani. Jaro bidda jato mayara bhaibhav tomara bhajane badha. Jaro bidda jato mayara bhaibhav tomara bhajane badha. Moha janamiya anitya saṃsāre. Moha janamiya anitya saṃsāre. Jīva ke kariyā gadhā. Jīva ke kariyā gadhā. Shei gadha hoye saṃsāre ra bhoja bahinu aneka kaal. Saṃsāre ra bhoja shei gadha hoye saṃsāre ra bhoja bahinu aneka kaal. Bardake ekon shaktira abhave. Bardake ekon shaktira abhave. Kichu nahi lage bhalo. Kichu nahi lage bhalo. Jibana jatana hoilo ekon shibida abida bhalo. Jibana jatana hoilo ekona shibida abida bhalo. Abidara jala ghatana bifar. Abidara jala ghatilo bishama. Shibida hoilo shelo. Shibida hoilo shelo. tomara charan bina kichu dhan sangsare na ache a tomara charana bina kichu dhan sangsare na ache a bhakati binoda jaro bidachari bhakati binoda jaro bidachari tua pada kare sha tua pada kare sha sha yeah we'll finish on that happy note having had a sad song all the way through. So this is, although many of the songs of Srila Bhaktivinoda, they're generic, but this one particularly applies to himself. He takes us on a journey through his life as an intellectual, as he sees it. And his ultimately his realizing the emptiness of that jnana ras, the taste of intellectualism. Now here in this song, jnana means the cultivation of mundane knowledge. You can have different meanings in different contexts, but in this context, it means the cultivation of mundane knowledge. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was actually an intellectual of the upcoming Bengali elite, studied in English medium, with a British curriculum, and Bidda Bilasha means he took great pleasure in that. He took it as something very pleasurable to study and become learned in. He gives the names of various authors in his essays, whose writings, all Western authors. Some of them are unknown nowadays, but some are still known. So it's a great pleasure among intellectuals to study so many things and then to discuss with others who are on the same intellectual level and bandy around different ideas and show oneself to be very learned. So it's the pleasure that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in such pleasurable activities of knowledge, of study, I pass so much time, parama shahoshayami. So it means with great conviction, or that, yeah, this is it. So shahosh can mean courage or boldness, with great conviction, and with a great boldness in his great conviction in his own abilities, that I can study, I can mix with other people, I can write things, I can hold my own in the society of intellectuals. So he took great pleasure in that. We can extrapolate from his words. There's so much There's very little said and very much which is implied. But yeah, the great problem here is that Tomara Charon Nab Hojinu Kobu, I didn't worship your lotus feet at all, not ever. Which was the actual situation if we see the autobiography of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He passed the early part of his life as if a complete materialist with no knowledge of or interest in Krishna. Of course, anyone living in Bengal at that time, and even up to the present time, can't be totally unknowledgeable about Krishna. But as far as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was concerned, Krishna was not part of his... That's not even worth thinking about. That's for, you know, Krishna, Vaishnavas. You heard of them, you know about them, but it's nothing to do with you. It's way, way below your dignity. You not even consider that you could have anything to do with any such thing. It's just like... There must be gangs of thieves in Krishnanagara and Navadvip. There must be. I mean, there are in any town of that size, or criminals in any town, in most countries in the world, not in every country in the world. But, okay, so you know about it, you have some vague idea that they're there, but it's really nothing to do with you. You lock up your house at night, and you don't think about it. You know, it's nothing. You're going to have anything to do with them whatsoever. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in a different world, practically in a different universe. And maybe that people are living side by side, but they're practically in a different world altogether. Even the man may be a rich man, and the man and his servants, they interact with each other, but they're in a different world. They have different aspirations, different social life, even a different level of language, different level of learning. They interact, the servant serves the master and then goes back to his own company, and they're in a different world altogether. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in the small but influential world of the Bengali Bhadralok, who were on the intellectual cusp, the up-and-coming young Bengalis who are going to change India for the better, having imbibed Western ideas, which have put by taking the British education, they could understand that everything Indian is useless, and we have to bring in all the Western ideas that will be beneficial, get out all these superstitions that the rest of our ignorant brothers and sisters are going by. This is what the British taught them, and they believed it. But many of them didn't fully believe it, and so they thought, well, actually, Hinduism's not so bad. It just needs a little reforming to be in line with the ideals of justice and freedom and fairness that they learned from the British. Of course, the British were teaching this to them, but they had no intention of treating the Indians as equal. So the idea of justice means that there's an inseparable line, or an insurpassable line between the British and the Indians. And although a few army Tommies, which means ordinary soldiers, they sometimes married Indian girls, and then they would get a job on the Indian railways. So there's some interaction, but then they became part of Indian society, not that the Indian women became part of Western society. They formed another caste, the Anglo-Indians, Christian caste. You'll still find in Kharagpur and places, there's whole colonies of Anglo-Indians who work on the railways. So he was in this world, you know, all grand notions of improving the world and bringing in a revolution, all these great ideas that have been fomenting in the Western world, all the great ideas, who is that, Macaulay said that one shelf of any library in Europe is better than all the writings of everything in India since time immemorial. So they believe that these people, they believe, oh yeah, we don't find anything in our literature. Of course, they didn't know their literature. You see, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't know Sanskrit. Traditional Indian education means Sanskrit. That's what it begins with. Education means Sanskrit. When you take Upanayanam, that's the beginning of formal education, and then you're admitted to Gurukul, and it's in Sanskrit. But you know, didn't even know any Sanskrit. What's the use? Even up to the present day, you'll find Sanskrit is listed as a dead language. Why? It was never dead, but they advertise it. There have always been people. There are people up to the present day speaking Sanskrit, a dead language. They buried it alive. They wanted to do. So there's Sanskrit, what's all that? That's all stories, Puranas, all giants and ten heads and gods with elephant heads. That's just ridiculous. You have to read in English and get some real education and understand what life is all. So they're very confident. Paramashahose, I studied with great confidence. Yes, now we know, by the grace of the British, we know what the Indians really need, India's real need. And then some of them, they wanted to make some. Therefore, there came out the Brahma Samaj, which tried to make some new kind of... Okay, well, Hinduism, that's off. But we don't really want to become Christian, so they made up something in between called the Brahma Samaj. And then Ramakrishna Mission. Mission, see that word? It's an English word, it's not a Bengali word. It's become a Bengali word, thanks to Vivekananda. So the idea, yes, you see, the Indian religion, it's all otherworldly, when we have to become this worldly. Jesus, he didn't just talk about, he helped the poor, so we have to look at all the poor. And first the British made the Indians poor. Why did they come to India? To rob it, to loot it. And having done that, they say, see, you're just a bunch of poverty-stricken people. We need to run your country because you don't know how to run it properly. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was enamored of all this in his youth. Of course, this is all external. He's a great pure devotee of the Lord. But he's giving the story of his life, which he will continue to do in the next few songs. So he's studying, but then later he came to study the Vaishnava literature and understand what is the scope of this. Of course, a major part of the British education was Christianity, and in part, Jesus, he's so much better than all your profligate Krishna God and your who never even existed anyway, but Jesus, he's so compassionate. But when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to read the Chaitanya Bhagavad, he understood the compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya daya katha karaha bichar karale chitte pabe chamarka, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. If one considers the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will simply become astonished. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, later in life, having been through all of this fascination with intellectualism, which for him meant English intellectualism, and even up to the present time, the English language dominates the world. There are so many writers and thinkers in so many languages, but it's the English language which dominates, and they always want to give credit to the English. Even the Even the Indian people, they always put in the news if some Indian born in America gets some big power, just like some Indian-bodied American citizen just got appointed to some big political post in America, and it comes in the Indian headlines. Oh, one of us! Oh, one of us! He got a big post in America. Oh, how great for India! As if all India can do to become great is to have some Indian converted into a Christian beef eater in America, getting some political post. So they're completely enamored by this idea of intellectualism means studying Western literature. But the result, I didn't worship your lotus feet at all, ever. You may say, what's the problem with all this Western stuff? There's no Krishna. You won't find Krishna there anywhere until Srila Prabhupada gave his books in English and purified the English language. So he says, Ekona Sharana Tumi. So this is a song of mixed lamentation and relief. There's some relief. Now I've attained the lotus feet of Krishna. But still, there's a lamentation that how I wasted so much time, how I spoiled my life. So that lamentation is there. Ekona Sharana Tumi Parite. So he gives a review that going on studying and studying, I became more and more eager. My faith in all of this study, oh, this is so wonderful, reading this book and that book, so wonderful, so many great ideas are here. And I thought, well, this is it, you know, studying, this is what life's all about, this is what I'm doing, this is, oh, another book, I have to read this book and that book. Someone said, have you read this book yet? Oh, you must read this book, put it on your list. You know, I have to read this one and that one. Oh, you didn't read that one yet? Did you hear about that new book? Oh, how wonderful. But now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, that idea that life would be wonderful, everything would be fulfilled by studying and becoming very knowledgeable and having so many wonder, you take in so many ideas of others and then you discuss with other intellectuals and then you come up with your own intellectual position. But Bhaktivinoda says, now I see, it's all. That whole outlook, that whole hope, Shayasha Bifal, it all came to nothing. It was all useless. Nothing, ultimately nothing comes of it. There's nothing there. There is a feeling, that's there's some feeling. It's there are different levels of pleasure. Indriyani Purani Ahur Indriyebhya Parangmanaha Manasastu Parabuddhe Yo Buddhe Paratastu Saha. There are different levels. There's the sensual level, the mental level, the intellectual level, and the spiritual level. So the intellectual level, that is higher than the gross sensual level or the mental level. There's a difference between the mental level. Mental level means the level of experience, where one feels. Yeah, one has a feeling of happiness or distress. The intellectual, one thinks oneself above everyone else. Yes. I'm in a different category. I can see, yes, I know this and so many things. Just like we're reminded of the story of the scholar and the boatman. But ultimately, Bhaktivinoda Thakur feels that he's experiencing that actually this gyan, this intellectualism, which I thought was so valid and so potent, it's actually very weak. There's no real power there. Now we may think, Well, actually, intellectualism, it is important. Ideas have consequences. Among the dozens or hundreds of intellectual books written in the last century, books that have changed or added to the intellectual corpus of thinking man of the contemporary world, one of them was called Ideas Have Consequences. And you can understand that. Marx's idea had consequences. Hitler's idea had consequences. Donald Trump's ideas, whatever they may be, they're going to have consequences. It's not just that people come in and they start doing things. There's some idea, there's some concept behind it. So it does seem that intellectualism is very important. And you could say, well, Srila Prabhupada recognized that in writing so many books and getting them distributed. Ideas are important, but jaravidya, or mundane knowledge, ultimately it's not powerful. It seems powerful because it changes the world from this way to that way. The Russian society into a communistic society. That's a great, or the teachings of Jesus Christ swept the Western world. The teachings of Hazrat Muhammad, peace be upon him, or you get your head chopped off. His ideas, or the Allah's ideas, as channeled through him, they had a tremendous impact. So he may say that, it is powerful. Yeah, it is powerful. It appears to us to be powerful. But among all these changes in society, we've come from the Dark Ages to the Middle Ages, the Reformation, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Age, the Post-Industrial Age. You see, it's all different ideas. The scientists, people studying science, and they discovered things. The world has changed, but ultimately nothing's changed. It's all the same thing. It's birth, death, old age, and disease. Forgetting Krishna. So it may seem to be very powerful, as long as we don't know that the real purpose of life is to take shelter of Krishna. So it is a very great illusion that makes one think that one has risen above the platform of ignorance. That's why it's called vidya. It's called vidya, means knowledge. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, se vidya avidya jani, it's actually not real knowledge at all. It's knowledge of that which is not worth knowing about. We find in the Gita, Vedaischa sarva aham eva vidyaha. In the Bhagavatam, vidyam vastavam atra vastu. Vidya means that which is to be, that which is worth knowing. It's not worth knowing how many windows are in the Empire State Building. It's not worth knowing how caterpillars turn into butterflies. It's not worth knowing how to make a nuclear bomb. Now, you may say, well, there are very good things. You see, now, I had a minor injury and someone knew how to put on this poultice. So, it's worth knowing. There's so many things worth knowing. If you didn't know how to make clothes, then you'd have to run around naked like used to be around this area. You used to see, did you ever see them, the tribal people running around with bows and arrows in the jungle? They've probably all run away now, but they used to be right here in this area, and they're practically no clothes they'd wear ever. So they didn't want to know about how to wear clothes or any such things. So you may say, well, knowledge is very, yeah, it's useful, but it is useful up to a point. It's useful for living in this world, but then ultimately, living in this world is all useless, so knowledge about this world is ultimately all useless. It's a miss is as good as a mile. If you don't hit the point, you may make so many scientists come together and they spend months and months working, and technologists, and they make a rocket to blast someone off to the moon. And they fire the rocket, it goes up 20 meters and explodes. And everyone's sorry. Oh, they died. And there's an Indian woman in one of them. And we did a program in Kurukshetra, and some hall was named after her. She's supposed to be very heroic because she happened to be sitting in the inside the cabin of that thing which blasted off to space, but it only got 20 meters up before it blew up. Chola, something her name. What's her name? Kalpana. She had some kalpana that she was going to become some great woman for going in space, but instead she got a hall named after her in Kurukshetra. I think she was from Kurukshetra. So this all useless, ultimately useless. So whatever we know, unless we know Krishna, it all comes to zero, or jiro, as they say in Bengali. So, se jnana ajnanaja, it's all ultimately useless. Then, jaro biddha jato, all of the knowledge in the material world, put it all together. What is it? It's something very great and wonderful, you could say. So many different subjects, which if you look in the university which courses they're offering, nowadays there are courses which some time ago people would have never even imagined there were such subjects, that even such subjects existed. Just like if you go to a hospital, you have to bring a dictionary with you. There's nephrology department and urology department and ophthalmology department. What does all this mean? They're studying. So someone spends their whole life studying kidney stones. Actually, I went to a super specialist some years. I had a kidney stone, or some stone or other. So he's a super specialist, means he'd studied for about 12 years to become a super specialist in kidney stones. That's in Baroda. Some reason or other, so many people in Baroda have stones. So then the first question I asked him was, well, how are stones formed? And he said, we don't know. That was his answer. So, anyway, he knows how to diagnose them and get rid of them. But actually, instead of spending money going to him, you can just take some little herb. What's that called? Pathor bhed, something like that. Just take it and finished. If anyone happens to get a stone and wants to get it cured quickly without spending any money, just ask some local Bengali and get this herb and grind it up with a little black pepper. I'm just trying to think of the English word because I never say it in English. Kali Mirch, and take it, wait for 1 hour, drink lots of water, and it'll get flushed out and the stone will be gone. So that's some useful knowledge. But whether you use Ayurveda or local herbal knowledge or whatever, without knowing Krishna, everything is useless. This is the conclusion that Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to. But especially that kind of knowledge which he studied, he found Tomara Bhajana, my eyes, Mayar Bhaibhav, it's so great, it's so wonderful, we've studied so many things, we're so advanced. Now we know so many things which people didn't know previously. Mayar Bhaibhav, Bhaibhav means the great glory, this glory, oh, so wonderful, oh, we know so many things. But what's the problem? Tomara bhajane badha. It's a great obstacle in worshipping Krishna. Because one thinks, one knows so many things. We don't need God. We're working everything out ourselves. They become so proud, and that pride is a great obstacle in worshipping Krishna. The idea that, one thing is the idea that we can, by ourselves, become so knowledgeable, and we don't need... This idea of God is just some idea made up by ignorant people. The God of the gaps. Richard Dawkins says. People don't know, so they say it's God. But now, you say they don't know how the world was created, so they say God was created. But now we know. There was a big bang. There was no God. Nothing, there was nothing, and it exploded. And that's the explanation. And we say, you can laugh, but we have books and books full of mathematical calculations. You say, prove it. Okay, here's the proof. And we give you books and books of mathematical calculations. You can't understand it. We can understand it. You should just believe us. That's all. Never mind that other scientists say, they're arguing among themselves. No, this calculation is wrong. They'll find out that's wrong, or it doesn't. Then you have to do some experiments to try and find out, to try and prove. But what are they going to prove? How can you say? Who could? They think they can predict how the universe. There's nothing, absolute nothingness, which is unimaginable. Because nothing can only exist in the, we can only conceive of nothing in relationship to something. And then everything, you can, by studying the world as it is now, we can extrapolate or detrapolate, I don't know if there's any such word, you can trace backwards, extrapolate and prove that how it all began. Okay. What if you didn't know and we give you a butterfly and you have to go back to it came from what? How would you ever come up with the idea it came from a caterpillar? Would anyone ever come up, if you didn't know that butterflies come from caterpillars, how would you ever imagine that a butterfly came from a caterpillar? You get the idea? That just by seeing things as they are now, how can you understand what their origin is? If you see an old, shriveled up person, you can't imagine that one... Well, we can because we see so many instances of it, but how would we imagine that this was once a bouncy little baby? So there's... Anyway, all of this... So, the pride of knowledge... Bidara Gaurave, he's in the previous song, he spoke about this. The pride of knowledge. And also, that's an obstacle in worshipping Krishna. When you think that God, just for less intelligent people, or the fascination with knowledge. There's a certain feeling of fascination. That one gets pleasure in studying so many things and learning so many things. There's great fascination in this. But it's a distraction. It's not the real taste. It's not the nectar for which we're always anxious. It doesn't free us from birth, death, old age and disease. It doesn't satisfy the soul. It may satisfy the intellect, but ultimately we won't be... There's no ultimate satisfaction in that. It's a distraction at best. Moha janamiya. Out of this, all this knowledge, what arose? More illusion. In this material world, we're already in illusion. And by studying it more and more, we become in more illusion because we think, now I understand it. We don't understand it at all. Yeah. We think, yes, now I have a very good understanding. And you'll find in every field of so-called knowledge, including so-called science, someone has a theory, and then someone comes up with another theory. And they disagree. Yes, so-and-so, his theory about this is very good, but I disagree with it. I just was quickly looking through one of the books that Tamal Krishna Maharaj published from one of his university papers. And he was writing about the widely held idea that Protestant Christianity has given rise to the exploitation of nature, and then he quotes some other scholar who rebuts that idea, and it goes on and on and on, and someone else will come along and rebut that with some other idea, and it goes on and on. And in the meantime, people are getting born, growing up, and dying, and they don't care for all these different university theories. So there's so many theories come and go. But ultimately, it's just increasing the very idea that we can understand the world by our own intelligence just is another form of illusion. It's a more sophisticated form of illusion. So for all these philosophers, there's so many philosophers in the world, people purporting to give the answers or to have some idea, and no idea. They're all in big, big illusion. They might have some good points, but overall they haven't got a clue what's going on. All these big philosophers of the Western world, they don't even have a clue of the most basic understanding of reality, that we are eternal living beings and we suffer birth after birth. They haven't got a clue. Most of their philosophies are on a completely superficial platform of how to live in this world as a better person, how to make this world a better place. Another useless idea. How are they going to make it? Yes, we have a very... Now we made the world a very nice place, so everyone's very comfortably suffering birth, death, old age and disease. But nicely. Not in a very bad way, but now we're very comfortably suffering. It's all... Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling us. It's this intellectualism, Jaro Vidya, mundane knowledge, it in this material world, which is anyways temporary, anitya shangshari, it makes the jiva, who is supposed to be a loving servant of Krishna, makes him into a big ass. And that might sound, when we call someone or you're an ass, it sounds humorous. The very word sounds humorous. You're just an ass. Because the ass is such a stupid animal. He works all day to get some, because he thinks the owner is giving me some grass. Not saying he can have grass anyway, he doesn't have to work for the owner. And when he becomes old, he gets turned out on the streets. At least in Gujarat, in places like Anand, they get turned on the streets. And if someone's kind to them, they may take them into and have some place for protecting donkeys, donkey shala, something like that. But generally, they roam the streets, old donkeys, wandering the streets. So you become a big ass. And an ass, there is the, there's what's called the, I can't remember the Sanskrit word, but it's a, Gardhava, yeah, but there's something, the call, there's the nyai, the example of the ass calling out. Because if you hear the ass calling, it starts off with a big noise. And it gradually fades away. No one's listening. Yes, I have something to declare to the whole world. Ladies and gentlemen, Fade away. Fades, you become an ass. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I became such an ass, taking the load of samsara, materialistic existence. So the idea is that the ass carries big, heavy weights around. Bricks, for instance. Okay, bricks are taken from one place to another by asses. It's a very heavy weight. They're walking in the hot sun. It's of no benefit to them whatsoever. The master doesn't care for them. They're just a beast of burden. But they think, ooh, 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 I'm a very big philosopher. But he's useless. Bifale shevinu kripana durajana. He's uselessly serving some miserly master. So in the same way, one can amass all kinds of information within the mind. One's carrying, like an ass, all kinds of information. But at the but it's useless. It doesn't help one at all. So he says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I carried such loads around with me for such a great long time. He spent so much of his life being a so-called intellectual. Now in old age, I find I have no more energy left. So I may be physically no energy, or maybe you have no more mental energy. That when you're feeling fresh and young, and yes, and with all my ideas, I'm going to conquer the world and I'm going to show others what a great genius I am. There comes a point where I'm just tired. I'm just tired of all of this. Just tired. Oh, so much of my life. I was so eager when I was young to amass knowledge and have debates and write essays and have prizes for my essays and be called to give learned speeches before many other learned people, and they would applaud me and they would praise me and they would write in their journals, yes, we are very grateful to Kedarnath Datta. He came and gave such a learned speech, and we all feel very much edified by all of that. I'm tired of all this. There's nothing there but some egoism. Tired. I did that for so long. I was carrying that for so long. But now in old age, I've no energy left for any of that. And I can't find anything good. I can't find any pleasure in life. That's old age. Yesterday I was speaking to a godbrother who's 80 years old. He said, there's nothing that can prepare you for old age. We experience it again and again, and we forget again and again. People say, well, why do you forget if we have so many lives? One thing is, if we remembered, then we couldn't enjoy ourselves because we suffer so much every time. So every life we start off with fresh hope. Young children playing, young puppies, you see them playing, full of hope, full of life. Gradually they become old and hopeless, worn out, suffering. Even to walk one step, even to take one bite of food, everything becomes a struggle. Still the desire for enjoyment is there in the heart, but there's no scope to enjoy anything. Nothing is enjoyable. Everything becomes a self. So what is the use of knowing so many things? What is the use of being praised by so many other foolish people who also simply have to suffer in this world? There's nothing left. In old age, there's nothing. There's no hope of any pleasure, but still there's the desire for pleasure. This is the situation. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jibana Jatana. Now, my life is simply full of pain. Jibana Jatana Hoilo Ekon. And that knowledge, that which I thought was knowledge, now I see how it's actually all non-knowledge. It's not actually knowledge at all. It's a big collection of information which is of no ultimate importance. It can't help me now. I know so many things, but I have no energy to speak, no energy to walk, no energy to talk, no interest, and no one has interest in me. When you become old, like, then no one's interested in you either. So this avidya, I thought I was so learned, but now I know that's all non-knowledge, and it's burning me. I'm being burned by thinking how I wasted so much of my life. It's become the burning of this realization of my actual ignorance. One thing is to be ignorant, another thing is to think that you are knowledgeable when actually you're ignorant. And that's another kind of ignorance. If you don't know anything, okay, you're ignorant. But if you think you know a lot of things, and gradually come to understand that actually what I thought was very knowledgeable, but actually now I understand it's all ignorance. It's all useless, and that's burning me terribly, the very thought of this. And therefore, that knowledge which I'd collected, which I'd studied, which I'd amassed with great alacrity, it seems like a burning spear in my heart, piercing my heart. It gives, anyway, in old age there's so much pain, but he's feeling more pain. So much pain that I wasted my life amassing so much knowledge of useless things and becoming unnecessarily puffed up and associating with other people who we mutually nurtured our own, among ourselves, this feeling of, yes, yes, we're superior people, we're better than everyone. That's there in every generation, intellectuals. Uselessly wasting their life. Shibidda hoilo shelo. Then, another key line from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That tomara charan bina kichudan shongshare na achaya. In this whole material existence, there's nothing of any value other than your lotus feet. This is a key line. This is the whole point. This is the point of knowledge. This is what we are to understand. Actually, everything else is all extraneous, of no actual meaning. So, tomara charan bina kichudan shongshare na achaya. Bhakati vino jaro vidya chari tuapad kare sha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, realizing this, that apart from Krishna's lotus feet, there's nothing. So giving up that mundane knowledge, he prays to Krishna, I have taken and taking your feet as my side, the very essence of my existence. Okay, so just a few minutes, I guess, if there are any questions or comments, we can go for that. Tomorrow is the last day, huh? We have a few songs to sing. We may or may not go through them. Yeah, question please. Yeah, please, you say, as you had your, I saw your hand first. Do we have a an alternative mic? What's it called, cordless mic? No? Okay. You can come a little closer if you like, if you don't want to scream. Was there any particular incident in Bhaktivinoda's life which caused him to review his values and views? Yes, being given a copy of Chaitanya Bhagavat and reading that, that changed his whole life. Just as Prabhupada's books are doing the same thing, again and again and again. Probably at this very moment, definitely at this very moment, so many books of Srila Prabhupada are being distributed all over the world. We have an idea because those Prabhupada's books are so widely spread that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Chaitanya Bhagavat, like it was in everyone's house, but it wasn't like that at all. It was quite unusual to find a manuscript. But it changed his whole outlook. Yeah, Atul Krishna Prabhu had his hand up. Oh, you don't need a mic, right? Yeah.
He taught himself Sanskrit? He wrote in Sanskrit?
Yes, yeah. He taught himself Sanskrit. He didn't have a Sanskrit education. He also studied with Sanskrit tutors. From even if we are to judge in a material way, he was a very intelligent person. No doubt. Yeah.
What is the sense of popular how we can retain the impression of teachings? Because we, once we hear and when we are out of class. School.
It's a common question. We're here in the class, we go away, we forget everything. Well, you can pray to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. May your teachings remain ever in my heart. And make a practice. Sadhana means practice. We go on practice, and gradually it becomes deep in our consciousness. Go on with sadhana. Gradually, siddhi will come. Yeah, someone else had their hand up. Yeah, please. Knowledge that claims to be transcendental? I'm sorry, I can't hear very. The knowledge that appears to be transcendental. Could you give an example of what you're thinking about? There may be something which is propounded to be bhakti. Well, it's possible to use the language of bhakti and to, but actually to have mundane concepts. For instance, we may, Buddhists, they're very strong on the concept of compassion, especially Mahayana Buddhists. But their understanding of compassion and the Vaishnava understanding of compassion, it might even seem very similar. The idea of the Bodhisattva who, out of compassion, doesn't go to Nirvana but comes to this world to deliver others. Of course, there are so many philosophical problems with this very conception. But this idea, helping others, a compassion. Mother Teresa, helping others. So the idea of compassion is there. But the Vaishnava compassion is in a different category because it's based on reality. Mother Teresa couldn't help anyone, ultimately, because she couldn't deliver them from birth and death. She couldn't give them Krishna. Dalai Lama can't help anyone. Talks of compassion, and like Mother Teresa, eats meat every day. So apart from the hypocrisy involved, even materially they're not compassionate, at least upon the animals. But they can't deliver anyone to Krishna. So yeah, it may look like, yes, very great compassion, but it's not the real thing. So knowledge has to, this whole song was about mundane knowledge, but spiritual knowledge is very much required, which begins with distinguishing between spiritual and material. Without understanding the difference between spiritual and material, then all so-called good qualities like courage, compassion, justice, they're all useless. They're misleading. So that's the first thing we have to understand, the difference between spiritual and material. Otherwise, so-called religiousness or saintliness, it all comes to nothing. Doesn't lead us anywhere. Then you said something. Yeah. In the material world, we see hopelessness. Yeah, there are many dramas and poems and songs which have this karuna rasa. It's karuna rasa. No, it's different from compassion. It means pathos. The English word is pathos. There's a feeling of sadness. Romeo and Juliet. Oh, they loved each other so much, but oh. But that's a perverted reflection of the spiritual rasa, which is centered in Krishna. The mundane rasa simply leads to distress. The transcendental rasa is all bliss. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about that in another song. Chaitanya Charitamrita speaks of it also. We should be very careful not to be victimized by the mundane rasa. There's a mundane taste of various emotions, but they're not the real thing. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. This session is finished.